Blog Talk Radio.
Frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. Prolific podcaster, that's me, folks. I've got a podcast going here, there, and everywhere. And tonight, I'm bringing on Mr. Robert Cooper from 411 Mania's Music Zone. Hello, Robert. We are here to discuss the new Death Clock album, The Death Album 3. How you doing, Robert?
I'm not doing too shabby. Just happy to be here and ready to talk some awesome death metal.
That's right. Figured we'd set it off right with the theme from Death Clock's actual cartoon show, Metalocalypse, which is funny because we were talking before the show, and I was saying I'm actually a huge fan of the band. I've gone to see them twice on tour over the last couple of years. Not a tremendous fan of the show. Let me ask you, Robert, before we get into the actual album here, what's your thoughts on the show?
The show is one of those shows that I really do like. It's a funny show, and I love the references to metal and metal culture. But I kind of forget that it's on sometimes, sad as that is to say. I don't know when it really comes on. An Adult Swim's kind of not really what I tend to watch, because I love comedy, but their comedy's not my style.
Yeah, I used to watch a lot of Robot Chicken, and that was about the only thing on Cartoon Network that I could stand.
Love that show.
I haven't watched it this season. I have to catch up and watch the DC version. But Metalocalypse, actually, my brother-in-law got me into it. He's significantly younger than I am, so he knew of the show, and he was like, oh, you're into metal. You should watch Metalocalypse. And I gave, I think, the first season a try, and I fell in love with the band itself. I love the music on there. I felt, the writing of the show was very true to the genre of melodic death metal. And I like I said, I went and saw them twice. I bought the albums. Couldn't take the show, though. I tried after one season. It just wasn't my thing. It's a little gross and a little convoluted for me. And I was like, I'm going to go back to simple stuff like Family Guy.
There you go.
Like I said, I did really enjoy the first two albums, and when we talked about doing this podcast and we looked at what albums were out there, I got really excited. I didn't realize there was a new Death Clock out. So Death Clock has released their third album, number 10 on the Billboard 200, Death Album 3. What'd you think of that when you saw that Death Clock had made number 10 on the Billboard 200?
I was incredibly excited because, I mean, I knew they were a really big name in, like, popular culture because Adult Swim does have a lot of viewers. When I saw they were ranked that high on the list, I was like, wow. Even if these are kind of just – even if this is seen as a comedy act, that's a pretty big step for metal, heck, death metal in general. I thought that was pretty insane.
Yeah, I was shocked. I didn't realize that Death Clock had such a huge following. I mean, I've been to a bunch of Ozfest and Slayer. I've been to see some pretty heavy bands out there, and I don't know why it didn't occur to me that outside of the circle of metal fans that do exist, that Death Clock would be big enough to chart number 10. Either that, or there's just more metal fans out there than I thought there were.
Yeah, there's lots of them. Actually, when it comes to metal chartings this year, like the New Testament, I don't know if you've listened to that yet. New Testament album actually hit, I think, number 12.
I haven't listened to it yet. I'm actually a huge fan of Testament, but it's not on Spotify, so I haven't gotten it yet.
It is tremendous. And Gene Hoagland, who plays drums on the Death Clock album, plays drums for the New Testament album.
That's a selling point for me to go pick it up on iTunes then.
Yeah, it is. It's tremendous. It's, so far, it's the best metal album of this year.
What's fun about Death Clock is if you go to see them live, you know, keep referring to them as a joke band. It's when you go to see them live, they actually will project the cartoon band on a big screen, and then kind of like in an orchestra pit is the actual performer who does the voices and does the music on the television show with a touring band, and they're like an all black and just kind of. Down below the screen. And I'll tell you what, they're like Ministry tight. I mean, they don't miss a beat.
No. Actually, I'm trying to think, the vocals and guitars are all done by the guy who does Nathan Explosion's voice. I think he's the writer, Brendan Small. Brendan Small does that. Gene Hoagland's the drummer. And let me look here, because their touring bassist did the bass for the new album, and he did a very good job. Actually, Gene Hoagland's missing dates for Testament to go tour with Death Clock.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, because originally he was going to be all with Testament because of the Lamb of God debacle. I don't know if you heard all about what happened with that, but
ended up getting arrested in Europe.
Yeah, he was in jail for like a month, so their tour got canceled, and there was a headlining tour, I think, with Death Clock. So, Death Clock, there was no more tour dates, but those dates are back on, so he's now with Death Clock instead of Testament.
That's funny. Okay, so let's get into the actual third album here, and let me first say, I've been listening to the album for the last couple of days now since we decided to do this podcast. I got it on Spotify. Thank you. Thank God for Spotify. And I've given it a good listen a couple of times. And there's no complaining on my part. Let me first say that. The Death Clock, Death Album 3 is very good. I don't have a problem with it. If I have to come up with one criticism... and maybe kind of two criticisms that like Venn diagram, they kind of circle each other. It's the same thing that I've said about Slayer, who are one of my favorite bands ever, but it's kind of, you've heard one Slayer album, you've heard them all, especially at the place. one Six Feet Under album, you've kind of, you get it. They don't differ that much from album to album. And that's sort of my issue with the Death Album 3. Where the Death Album 1 was fantastic. Awaken is like one of my favorite songs ever. Musta, Brackish. Second album, more of the same. Third, by the time you get to this third album, it's like, okay, it's a Death Clock album. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But actually, I don't know if you've listened to very much Nile.
Yes, back in the day, a lot more Nile than now.
Yeah, their new Nile album. New Nile album is very good. But anyways, it kind of runs into the same problem this one does. Like, it's the same style. But my opinion on that album is the same as this. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, you're buying a Death Clock album for Death Clock. If Death Clock started covering Poison songs, I think I might have to throw it out the window.
I don't know. I do love a good cover. In my review of the Rocky movies, we played a Bullet for My Valentine cover of No Easy Way Out. One of my friends said, "Oh my God, they butchered it." I'm like, "There's no such thing as butchering when it comes to covers."
I don't know. I've heard some pretty bad ones.
No such thing as a bad cover, damn it. All right, so let's talk about this first song, and we are going to play some clips of the album. Got a couple of songs here that we're going to play and talk about. Not the whole songs. We don't have 20 hours to do this. But we are going to play some clips here. And the first song, and I'll tell you, if there's one thing that makes a Death Clock album great, it's they've got that, I don't know if you remember one of the Earache staple band, Earache Records staple bands of grindcore, Anal Cunt. But Anal
Cunt.
Oh,
my God. I sent pictures of your children to NAMBLA.
See, I was wondering if you were going to know who they were. But, yeah, what Anal Cunt great was not their music by far, was the name of their songs.
Yes. That's in Holocaust the East AFE. Yeah, it was Seth Putnam was a crazy bastard.
Seth Putnam had an interesting sense of humor.
Yeah.
But they had this thing about like their song titles were like, you know, paragraph long, and it was that sort of blue humor, you know, I sent picture of your kid to NAMBLA, things like that. Death Clock kind of in the same odd vein, and you know, why do I say that? Well, the first track on the Death Album 3 is I Ejaculate Fire, which is usually a recipe for gonorrhea, you know, some sort of sexually transmitted disease, but I don't know, it works in this instance.
They make it work.
So let's go ahead and break here and play a little bit of, and hopefully my audio clips work today, play a little bit of, either that or I'm going to have to do this a cappella, play a little bit of I Ejaculate. There we go. I'll play a little bit of I Ejaculate Fire, and then we'll talk about it.
That opening riff sums this album up perfectly.
You know what? One of the things I really like about Death Clock is they captured. Let me say I'm a huge critic of American metal. I think American metal tends to be very much one note. A lot of times it's two dimensional, kind of just candy for the brain. Compared to what, you might ask? Compared to European metal, which has this rich. You know, this rich contrast of, you know, you've got your humpa, you've got your pirate metal, you've got your melodic death metal. So it's interesting to me that an American television show for an American audience went with a European style of death metal that really captures that Children of Bodom in flames feel to it.
Yeah, it's actually funny because when you think of American death metal, you think of that Tampa scene, that classic death metal, you know, Death, Morbid Angel, and so they actually went with that more Gothenburg sound from Sweden that was popular around the, what was that, about early 1990s with At the Gates and bands like that. I think that is very, very kind of interesting, but I think it does suit the sound of the band, especially when you think about the characters in the show are all European for the most part.
No, and it totally makes sense, and it's very true to what the characters are supposed to be. But I think it also made for, you know, we were talking before that the popularity of Death Clock, I think it made for a more wide appeal as far as, you know, that melodic Gothenburg scene sound I think is more attractive to sort of your casual music fans who like harder music. I live in Tampa now. I'm actually from New York, but I live in Tampa, and so I'm very familiar with the American Tampa death metal scene that came out of the European grindcore. And it's always been that way. You know, American death metal has always been kind of, you know, Deicide or Cannibal Corpse. It's, you know, it's every song sounds the same. It's Cookie Monster attached to the, yeah. It's Cookie Monster on speed playing thrash metal. Which is great if you like that sort of thing, and Lord knows I've got enough Cannibal Corpse and Deicide albums. But if you're looking for music, you know, if you're looking for actually talented musicians playing really complicated, complex riffs and interesting sounds, I mean, they take that progressive sort of Camelot, Iron Maiden sound, and then they attach this really, you know, the Cookie Monster vocals to it. But even that, you know, where Cannibal Corpse was unintelligible, this isn't. You can clearly hear what he's trying to say for the most part, which I really enjoy.
Well, that's actually the worst part. Chris Barnes, when he was the Cannibal Corpse, their stuff is really hard for me to listen to. How deep and guttural. Like, I can't even emulate that.
Yeah.
I can emulate most metal vocalists, but not that.
The early Cannibal Corpse is a labor of love to listen to.
Well, have you got the best of both worlds when it comes to death metal? Because New York's like the number two when it comes to death metal.
Yeah, well, almost everybody passes through New York, but so you have a nice mix there. But so getting back to Death Clock, I like the fact that they took that sound and they've really and they've captured it. And this album, I think, more so than even the previous two, tended towards the more melodic side. I had said at the onset that Awaken is probably my favorite song by Death Clock. And there's nothing quite as heavy as Awaken on here. Again, you get that more of that Children of Bodom sound where it sounds like they're being backed up by, you know, an orchestra. You know, it's a very, I keep using the word melodic. I don't know how else to put it. But it's kind of that up and down. You know, again, it reminds me of Camelot in a way where they're just kind of all over the place, taking you on a journey in the music if you don't listen to the vocals.
Yeah, well, actually, what I find interesting is that that sense of melody that were in this first two, but have definitely kind of creeped in for this third one, kind of slowed the songs down a little bit.
Yeah, that was my point. Awaken is like straight up in your face thrash. You know, if someone could get Brock Lesnar back into the UFC, that should be his walkout music. It was that, you know, just, yeah, you know, it was very like five-finger death punch. You know, you just want to, you hear it, you want to punch someone in the face. It's fantastic. In this one, I kept waiting for that Awaken song, you know, or even like a Thunder Horse, and no, not so much.
No, well, I mean, I think that actually just kind of benefited, because just like we said, their sound hasn't really changed much, but that little difference in between albums can really make, well, the difference.
Sure, because I mean, what have we been saying? You know, you don't want to do the exact same album over and over and over again.
No, unless you're like Slayer and, you know, yeah.
And you have a loyal fan base and you can get away with it.
Yeah.
One part of the I Ejaculate Fire, which is more fun to say than it is to listen to.
which is a very tall order.
Indeed. One part of I Ejaculate Fire I really like is the middle of the song. I'm going to go ahead and play it now. Wrong song. I'm actually thinking of the middle of Impeach God, which I'll go ahead and play in a second. I broke that into two parts. There's the beginning of the song. It was one of those weird ones where it's a nice transition out of I Ejaculate Fire now. Where Impeach God kind of starts one way and sort of to go directly against what we've been saying about, you know, one note through an entire song, they break and go in a completely almost different direction in the middle of the song. Let's hear the first part of it now and then talk a little bit, and then I'll play the second part. So here, this is the second – this is actually my favorite song on this album. This was the one that when I was listening to it the first time, and when I listen to an album, I'll just kind of sit back and whatever jumps out at me, that's what I'll focus on. So I don't even like look at the song titles or anything. I'll like be driving, doing something, and it'll be in the background. And if something breaks my concentration, that's what I'll focus on. So this was the first song that did that for me. This was Impeach God. God cannot figure out where I've heard that.
Not sure exactly where it comes from either. It is very familiar. Have to track down maybe that riff sometime. Maybe go look at the YouTube comments and see if some idiot has something to say.
But that is easily the heaviest song on this album, in my opinion. I think it's heavier than I Ejaculate Fire. I don't know. It, like I said, it jumped out at me. What did you think about, what did it make you think of when you first heard it?
Well, you are certainly correct when you say it is the heaviest song off the album, which is kind of fitting for the album title, something that is such a heavy title to it. But, it wasn't really, honestly, the song wasn't one of my higher songs on the album, believe it or not. Like, the whole album is great, but this song kind of fit with the rest of the album, in my opinion. It kind of fit with that straight, melodic, death metal sound, but this song did have it was a bit heavier, and it had little awesome solos, which is a key mark of this album.
that's what I was getting to. Midway through the song, they do this, and I can tell you, it reminded me of a Metallica cover, Damage Case. And I'll go ahead and play that. But that was one of the things that I think I first tapped into. I was actually doing something at my desk at work, and I was involved. You know, I was just heavily involved in what I was doing there, and I had it on in the background. And I stopped what I was doing because all of a sudden I heard this riff, and I'm like, "Holy crap! Where have I heard that before?" Even more so than the first riff we were talking about. And I thought about it for a second. And I'm like, "Oh my God, that's Damage Case." And that made me like the song that much more. I don't know why. It's not like Damage Case is a great song, but, you know, it's for some odd reason, like, it fit really, really well with the first part of it, and it made the song stand out to me.
Well, yeah, a good riff can do that, that's for sure.
So here's what I'm talking about. To just jump right out and go, hold on to Damage Case.
I'm just waiting for Hetfield to just come out and say, are you ready to hear the song?
I saw my bachelor party before I got married was my brother-in-law took me to go see Metallica and Lamb of God. That's all I wanted to do. And he isn't quite Phil Anselmo bad, but he does like to talk to the crowd, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's not even like his just talking. It's just, if you notice, like, especially in Death Magnetic, he ends everything with like a ah.
You know what's
something
what's
like
funny about that? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, there's like always something at the tail end of like a verse, and it's just become like a joke between me and my friend.
You know, it's funny. That was actually the story of the Black Album, where what's his face, the producer of that one, who's real popular.
Bob Rock.
Yeah, Bob Rock. The Bob Rock had said to them, was like, you know, your live playing is so much different than your studio cuts. You should play your studio cuts like you would play them live, and hence you got all of that yah in there at the end of a song, starting all the way back to the Black Album.
Oh, okay, that does make a lot of sense.
All right, so moving on. Have you ever had an opportunity to go see Death Clock live?
No, honestly, I've only went to one real concert, and it was the Mayhem Festival. I don't know if you've ever been to one of those.
Yes, I was at the one this past summer.
I was kind of pissed because it hit Atlanta. I live in North Carolina, so it hit like right in Atlanta, and it hit up in D.C. Too far for me to travel, but that was a really good festival that year. Actually, like, we went to see Megadeth. We actually got got gypped by Dave. Well, we kind of did, because they had autograph signings, and it was $15. You get an album, and they'll sign your sign the poster. So we get in line, and it ends up being 15 minutes late, and it's Chris Broderick and was it Nick Menza? Yeah, Nick Menza. No, not Nick Menza. Shit, it's the drummer. Sean Drover. Sorry, Nick Menza was the before him. Yeah, it was those two. And, you know, they couldn't have been nicer, but I was like, damn it, Dave. I haven't seen a Death Clock, and I know they're coming to Charlotte. It's them, All That Remains, somebody else, and Black Dahlia Murder's opening up, so that's got to be a killer show.
But yeah, first of all, if you ever have a chance to go see Black Dahlia Murder live, you need to do it. But I wish All That Remains, instead of touring as All That Remains with Death Clock, they should have toured as Austrian Death Machine.
Get to the Chopper!
Oh, my God. First of all, the very first time my friend played to me Get to the Chopper, I became obsessed with that band. Now, that's a band who, anytime I know that there's an album out, I'm running to go buy it. Fucking Austrian Death Machine is fantastic. But what a tour that would be, right? The Death Clock and Austrian Death Machine. The reason I was bringing it up was, if you ever have an opportunity to go see Death Clock live, you say that they're coming to your town pretty soon, really go. I mean, it's an interesting show. Like I said, they project the band on there, and you should do it at least once. You don't need to do it twice.
Unless you really like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've sat in the – I'm almost 40, and, you know, so my days are going
I'm
in the mosh pit.
I'm barely 20.
There you go. My days are going in the mosh pit are probably behind me, unless it's a Clutch show. So I sat in the audience for – I sat in, the regular seats for Death Clock, and normally I would be moshing, and I wouldn't even be paying attention to anything on stage, so what I'm about to say would be irrelevant. But when you've watched the show, what they do is they play clips from the show in between songs. So the band, as a cartoon, talks to you. Go ahead.
I was about to say, I can understand that because it'll set up the songs.
Right. And so you have this little ball of death thing. I don't remember what the character's name is, but he talks to you and makes fun of you and calls your names and stuff. And then, you know, the band will basically, if you've watched the show, you know that there's little videos for the songs. They play the videos, which was interesting.
Right.
I didn't realize that there was nudity in the Thunder Horse video. That was a little surprising.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever recalled seeing nudity, but then again, I did probably see it on TV. So, yeah, they don't show nudity on TV very often.
No, a little shocking. Not that I'm a prude, but I was not expecting it. And so, like I said, the first time you see it, it's like, oh, okay, well, that's the Death Clock experience. Second time I saw them, it was after they had released the Death Album too, and it was the same show. I mean, literally the same show. jokes were the same. The almost to a letter, the song list was the same. And I thought, all right, well, if you're not going to bother even changing up the act a little bit, I understand it's a cartoon and all, but I'm not going to do this again.
Yeah, I kind of expect them to at least change the set with some to showcase their newer album, but I guess
yeah,
really you're not going to get much different.
And maybe this third time around they did, but, you know, it was kind of once bitten, twice shy. But I would encourage people listening to this podcast that if you've never seen Death Clock Live, I'm all about going to a fun show, and that is fun. First of all, it's a lot of kids, which is generally not.
Oh, yeah,
because
it's cartoon. I don't want to say cartoons, but it's a animated, so you're going to get a lot of those middle school,
yeah,
high school douchebags.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's when Cartoon Network is popular with the kiddies.
yeah.
You know, and a lot of people gravitate to Metalocalypse, and so, you know, while you might not get a lot of kids to the Children of Bodom, you know, or the Finn Troll, because who knows who the hell they are.
Finn Troll. I would go to that show.
Yeah, I saw them earlier this year or late last year. I don't remember quite when. I have a kid now. I don't remember much. But I left my daddy duties for a night to go see Finn Troll and the other Hoompa band that tours around. And
Corporate
they
Klani?
Were, yeah. Yeah, so, no, I've seen Corporate Klani also, but it was Finn Troll and Eluvite?
Eluvite?
Yes, that's the one. It was both of them.
Oh, that is a killer show.
It really was. Dude, Tampa and Orlando have quite the metal scene.
Oh, yeah, they seem to get everything. Like, we got, because I live, like, 2 hours away from Charlotte, but they got a Primordial playing over there a few months ago. I don't know if you ever listened to them, but they're amazing.
Yeah, since I left New York, which New York got quite a number of shows, too. In fact, the first time I saw Corporate Klani was in New York because that was the only place they were playing. I've seen Nightwish. I've had to leave Tampa to go see Nightwish in New York City.
I wish I could see them.
They are, with and without Tarja, they are quite fantastic.
They have a new woman anyway, so.
Right. Sorry, so moving on to the next song. The next song that I wanted to highlight in this review is Crush the Industry.
Yes.
Now, what do you know of Crush the Industry? What was your reaction to that song?
Like, once the Ejaculate Fire went off, I was like, oh, okay, that was a really good song. And then the Crush the Industry came on, I'm like, whoa, this is an even better song. I was actually surprised. I was like, I thought Ejaculate Fire was, like, the high point, and then it just kind of went up.
Doing a little bit of research before the podcast, I noticed that fans of the show and of the band are very high on Crush the Industry. Apparently that was one of the big favorites among fans. So here it is, a little piece of Crush the Industry for you. I love the way that they do that.
Yeah, it's that is a very epic intro. Honestly, kind of reminds me of, like, not in, like, playing style, but almost like an entrance that Demi Bourgeois would have.
Very much so. Now all they need is an actual orchestra.
Yes, well, heck, they should do it. I mean, everybody else has played with an orchestra by now.
There you go. Maybe Demour Borgir will lend them theirs.
Yeah. They'll be, you know, I'd actually go see a show if it was those two together, just because that'd be very funny.
I have seen Demour Borgir live. I saw them in Brooklyn a couple years back. And, you know, my wife deigned to go see the Rockstar Mayhem show. She sat through her first Slayer show against her will, but she did it. You know, it was my birthday, and she did that for me. There are some bands that I refuse to, you know, this is very romantic. There are some bands that, though, she refuses to go see, and I refuse to take her to because I don't want to give her post-traumatic stress disorder. Demour Borgir is one of them.
Oh, are they kind of like a Mayhem, where there's, like, blood and goat heads and everywhere?
They're not that guar-like. It's more of they did a lot of they show up in corpse paint, first of all, and then they do the black light. So basically what it looks like, glow-in-the-dark zombies coming at you, because they play, and it might have just been the stage in Brooklyn also was very small, because I don't remember them having to do this when they played Ozfest a couple years later. And I don't know what outdoors amphitheaters you have in North Carolina, but in Long Island you have Jones Beach Theater, which is outdoors. And
yeah,
so it's a different setup there. Yeah, but this small club in Brooklyn that they played at, they all stood, everyone but the drummer, literally side by side, so it looked like an army of zombies, you know, playing music and coming at you. Which was cool to look at, but not something I want to expose my wife to, who can't handle Marilyn Manson.
Oh, no. No. Not a bit. It's actually funny. Last year, at the community college I go to, they had a carnival or something. They had face painting. So I walk up to the one metal guy. I'm like, you got to do corpse paint, right? He goes, yeah. I'm like, I want Abba from Immortal. So I got that, and then everybody else is trying to guess which member of KISS I was, of course. And then I proceeded to get in the car, drive, go to the drugstore with just corpse paint, like full denim corpse paint, and just, you know, being nice to everybody. Everybody's like trying to think I'm a serial killer, but
that's yeah. Always fun for a night out. I don't do the corpse paint. I don't do any face paint. I don't do the Ultimate Warrior. I don't do Sting. I don't do the Joker. I wouldn't do the Joker now anyway. Someone might think you're going to shoot the place up. You know, I just not my thing.
No, I don't. You know, I hated face paint as a kid, but when I did the corpse paint, I'm like, you know, I can get used to this.
Now, I've always enjoyed the theatrical element to kind of to go back to contrast between the European black metal scene and the death metal scene of America. You know, I remember I was in a band in high school, and this is even before I got into black metal. I think the heaviest thing I'd listened to back then was probably Slayer. But I remember in high school, you know, my band was quite the, you know, theatrical. I mean, we had like weird get-ups and stuff, and we had like guys running across the stage with like hatchets and stuff like that. And it was anything to just be fun and goofy and stand out. And I remember a guy who was in a death metal band in high school. We did like a battle of the bands kind of a thing. And we walk off stage, and he kind of looks at me, and he looks at the band, and he goes, "Why can't you guys just play music?" I said, you know, why don't you play music and we'll do our thing and we'll see who remembers what at the end of the night. And
boom.
Exactly. And while you may or may not like bands like Cradle of Filth or Mayhem or what have you, Cradle of Filth will always be one of those bands that stands out to me because they're so over the top, ridiculously theatrical.
Yeah, it's... Wasn't even. I just don't like Cradle of Filth personally, but yeah, like Mayhem, those really, like, insanely theatrical bands. Like, hell, when I was doing the for the top five music, it was top five horror videos. Like a lot of those. Like I think I had Gorgoroth and Cradle of Filth, and was it Rammstein? Those had to be honorable mentions because they had too much nudity and gore to be on the list.
Gorgoroth, I think, does a cover of "I Need a Hero," which is fucking amazing.
Who does that album?
Gorgoroth.
Oh, Gorgoroth. Okay, yeah. I've never actually seen that album cover.
Yeah, they do an awesome cover of "I Need a Hero." I think there's another one that they did, and I can't remember the name of it, but they've got a couple of them where I don't know about any of their original material, but damn, their covers are quite good. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, you got to find, with so much music out there, as well as drama in the LBC, you got to find a way to stand out, which kind of take it back to the relevance of Death Clock. I think it's one of the reasons why they do as well as they do. It's, you know, they have the benefit of obviously being a cartoon band on a, you know, well-watched television network in America, so that helps, I'm sure. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, but like I said, the odd song titles and the stage, their stage show and everything, all of these things make them memorable. So, you know, when people are going, oh, well, you know, I want to go see a metal band, this is one of the bands that they'll gravitate to.
Yeah, I think that is definitely, especially their, because that's something I don't think anybody else has, which is that, well, I guess one, that syndication of all around the country, as well as just being that, like, having that cartoon, those cartoons on the stage, it's just something that you'll never see anywhere else.
No, they are definitely one of a kind.
Yeah, that's a problem. I think what a lot of people have a problem with metal is that there's a lot of bands that aren't different from the others.
Yeah.
And that's my problem personally. I don't know what you feel about deathcore, but deathcore really pisses me off because it's the same thing over and over.
Metal Decapitation live, and I'm not entirely sure where the one song ended and the next song began. I was just glad when it was over.
Yeah, I don't mind Metal Decapitation, but I saw Suicide Silence. It was on that Megadeth tour. I was like so pissed because they had everything tuned really high, and then everything was really loud. Like, there was so much vibration, my insides were shaking. Like, it was just bad. Like, I hate to call a band bad, but it was just bad.
You know, like I said, some bands, they're playing music. Once you've heard it a billion times, there has to be something about it that makes it stand out, you know, an extra instrument. You know, it's one of the reasons why I like the battle metal type bands, like Turesis. You know, the introduction of something like a fiddle gives it a dynamic element that makes it different than anything else that's out there. Now, the fact that they play like epic battle metal, you know, Lord of the Rings music and stuff, you know, it makes it stand out all on its own. But if they just start playing straight up thrash and you throw a fiddle in there, it's still going to sound different than, say, Anthrax.
Yeah. Actually, Insifrum, I don't know if you've listened to much of them, but they have a new
Which
album.
Band?
They have a new album, Insifrum.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, they have a new album that came out, I think this week, last week, something like that. But, they have a lot of that battle metal type with the that heavy, like, kind of that blackened sound to them, but they have the all those folk instruments involved.
Mm-hmm. They do a great cover of Battery, which, you know, it might be heresy to some Metallica fans out there, but quite frankly, I think their cover of Battery is better than the original.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to hear it. But one thing I do always say is the S&M version of Master of Puppets is the best. Because that orchestra in the back just... Yeah, actually, that album, like, Load and Reload, in my opinion, are two good half albums. If you want to cut the crap out of both of them, you have one good album. And S&M took the good songs off of that album, both those albums, and really filled in what was missing. This is the same thing with, like, a...
Go ahead and finish.
I was about to say, they... Of Wolfen Man off of the Black Album. The first time I ever heard it was from the S&M, and I loved it because it was so full and had, like, so many good things to it. And then I heard the album version, I'm like, this is boring.
It's funny how it can, changing a song like that can do it. And this is going to be a little off the beaten path, but stay with me. You know, I have a daughter. She's actually going to be 2 years old in January of next year, so in a month or so. And when, you know, being a metal guy, you know, I got her immediately upon birth into the Rockabye Baby series. So we got the Rockabye Baby Metallica, and we got the Rockabye Baby Green Day, and the Ramones, and Journey. And now, if you don't know what Rockabye Baby is, it's everything I just said. It's all of those bands, but they take the songs and they break them down into lullabies. So,
oh, yeah,
like,
they did that with Kiss and Slayer.
I haven't seen the Slayer one, but now I'm going to have to look for it. But yeah, they like they replaced like the guitar and stuff like that with like a xylophone, and you know, and it's this, it's the essence of the song done as a sweet, sweet lullaby. And I'll tell you, there are songs that I love from Metallica, Master of Puppets being one of them, but done as a lullaby, not so much. But then there are other songs by Metallica where I wasn't a huge fan of them, but then I heard them as broken down as this lullaby, and I'm like, holy crap, that's amazing. But I want to ask you this. aside from my odd compulsion with covers, one thing that stood out to me with this album, and it may be because I heard the version of it I heard was on Spotify, but even the versions that I've seen on YouTube and such, it just seems like the Death Album 3 was not mixed well. The instruments were mixed higher than the vocals, and that's a shame because the vocals are half the time hilarious and a huge part of the song.
Yeah, I honestly didn't notice that, but perhaps it's because I tend to listen for the guitars. Because the problem with those guttural vocals that Nathan Explosion has as the character is that sometimes they do just blend in with the song. But I don't know. I didn't really notice much about the mixing, but I can certainly see what you're saying because now that I think about it, yeah, there was a little bit off about it.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
The bass was, like, audible, but it was only really, like, super audible when they wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a little difficult to listen to in that sense because I'm trying to, I mean, because as background music or just listening to the instruments, it was fine. You know, they're good songs. They're fun songs to listen to and drive along and whatever. However, when you're trying to hear the vocals, so that I can comment on them for purposes like this podcast, or even just to hear the funny things he's saying about wanting to ejaculate fire and such, I'm not getting it. You know, it's too low, and those are one of the things. I mean, I don't like to be like a music snob, but it's one of those things that really irks me. Is they spend all this time in production trying to get the sound right, and then how did that ever leave the studio?
Well, it could be worse. It could be and just as well.
And Justice for All or Saint Anger?
No, I was just talking about I was just talking about with bass. Ooh. Injustice,
I never noticed that before. I'll have to go back and listen to Injustice for All. We're gonna break here and talk about the next song here. We got two more songs to play. I have to actually owe you an apology. I did not realize that one of your favorite songs on this was Sky Hunter, and I tried desperately as the show began to upload the file, and Blog Talk Radio is fighting with me. So there will be no Sky Hunter, but next time we do this, you'll have to tell me which songs you like so I make sure they're on there. But in the meantime, we have two more songs I want to play and talk about before we break out of this podcast, and the next one is Matt Hamill's favorite song, The Hammer. Came out to that as his entrance music, he would be a lot more interesting as a fighter.
Well, yeah, well, then again, he'd be a lot more interesting as a fighter if he didn't go to a 15-minute snooze fest.
I would be more sympathetic to him if he came out to Death Clock.
Yeah, well, heck, I think if Michael Coleman were still around, he should have came out to Death Clock.
I'll tell you that and I'm not even just saying just because the song's called The Hammer. It could have been called The Ham Sandwich, but I mean, that got That's got entrance music written all over it. That is my new walkout song.
Yeah, I think when next time I get a WWE game, that's probably going to be the walkout song.
Yeah, that is a fun just straight up raw in your face, you know, smash you in the head kind of a song. And really, what more can you say other than, you know, there are just some songs where like you hear it, you're like, yeah, I want to walk out to a cage or a ring or a pit or a Taipei death match. I don't know, whatever you like. And that one does it for me.
Yeah, I think there's nothing that says Taipei death match more than the hammer.
All right, we got a little over 10 minutes left, and there's one more song I want to play, and then we're going to close out here. I actually have some very special outro music, and I typically don't do outros for my podcast because I'm too busy with these long intros. But, you know, we're going to end this Death Clock podcast the right way, and we'll get to that momentarily. But the last song on here, yeah, it's a surprise. You're going to have to hang on and wait. But this last song on here, another one that seemed to be fairly popular amongst Death Clock fans was Andromeda. The way it's going to sound, but that sounds like every death metal song I've ever heard, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, no. I don't know if you said that sounds like every country song I've ever heard.
Yeah, that sounds just like Icky Breaky Heart.
Oh, God. Not Billy Ray.
But
no,
yeah, they,
totally have to, I just totally have to agree with you on that, that point. This is it's a very, I mean, it will sound very derogatory for me to say this is standard death metal fare, but the standard death metal fare done the Death Clock way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's in the context of a Death Clock song and a Death Clock album, it's great. It is exactly what you want to hear. It works in an odd way where it is, if you didn't know it was Death Clock, I wouldn't necessarily guess that it was, but now that I know that, it almost makes it better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of like knowing that it's there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, it's like, good. They're not going too far out of the box. They aren't, you know, doing the Metallica. Well, once upon a time we were doing Injustice for All, and now we're going to give you Load. You know, like, wait, what? How did we get here? You know, it's there's one thing.
They got there by Metallica.
Exactly. You know, and I said this at the top of the podcast, and it bears repeating. There's a certain comfort in knowing that when you buy a Death Clock album, you're not going to get something bizarre. You know, you're not going to get, you know, Bjork. You know what I mean? You know, Animal Sounds and, you know, Nails on a Chalkboard.
You're not going
to
get a Mike Patton album.
And that's the thing. If you buy a Mike Patton album, you're buying performance art, and so you never know what you're going to get. And that's kind of the great thing about a Mike Patton album. You know, it's a box of chocolates. Some of them are poisonous, but
I have a friend of mine that's obsessed with Mike Patton.
I don't know about you, but do those people annoy you?
A little bit, but eventually, like, once you get good enough friends with them, you can just troll the living shit out of them.
Every single one of my friends in high school went to the church of Mike Patton and prayed at his altar. And I remember thinking, I don't want to say this out loud because these are the only friends I've got and I don't want to be excommunicated, but I don't see what the fuss is all about.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's a very talented vocalist.
Sure.
And he's the dude's nuts, but honestly, some of his stuff, I sit there, I'm like, this is interesting, but I can't stand 80 minutes of this.
Well, that's the thing, I brought up Bjork before, and I know people love them some Bjork. And that's the thing. I can appreciate that she's talented and she's artsy and she's very out of the box, but I can't listen to 45 minutes of kittens mewing.
Well, I guess on the flip side, some people are like, well, you know, Cannibal Corpse, I can't stand them. Which their new album is on my to-do list.
All right. So that takes us to the end. Let's do some summations here. Overall, what would you say about the new Death Clock album if you were trying to sell it to somebody, and what grade would you give it?
Well, as for a grade, actually, this is going to sound incredibly dorky, but I have a spreadsheet for all the metal albums that I've listened to this year, and I have them graded. Where's Death Clock? I gotta be Death Clock, like 100 for me is not like it's like impossible. Like, I gave it an 86, which I know when you get a 100-point scale, it's just kind of silly. But like 86 for me is like one of those that the album, I don't want to say it's monotonous, but it's kind of one sound. But if you get above the 85, which is the one sound, 86 is you're doing one sound, but there's not a bad song. Yeah, I don't want to say it's a one note album because it's got some very, very parts to it. But, I mean, it's standard melodic death metal. You know what you're getting. And it's done well. Done very well.
Yeah, I would absolutely 100% agree with that. It has to be one of those things where if you're in the mood to listen to death, really, really, really good death metal, where the songs are distinguishable and it's fun, and you don't want to think too much, then Death Clock is your bag. I mean, why go with something where you're not quite sure what you're going to get and it won't be as good when you can get, you know, this nice cut of prime rib right there for you to enjoy. And that's kind of my interpretation of this new Death Clock album. They made a death metal album. It was good. Yeah. That's all I ask for. And the songs are distinguishable. So
yeah.
I would agree with you. I would give it a strong B+. All right, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
This has been lots of fun. I've really enjoyed this. I'm hoping we get to do another one of these in the month of December and on. I will definitely be looking to, when the new Clutch album comes out, if you want to see me squeal like a girl and throw underwear and just be all kinds of excited, play some Clutch for me because they are by far my favorite band ever. So I'll be definitely looking forward to doing a podcast on that. Why don't you tell the good folks where they can follow you, where they can see you, and what kind of stuff you're writing, and where they can read it at?
Well, let's see. Following-wise, Facebook, if you want to come find me, my name's Robert Cooper. You can try to find me. I won't guarantee I'll add you. But as for other things, you can follow me on Twitter. I am at TheMetalCoop, TheMetalCoop. And writing-wise, late Sunday, early Monday is when my column comes out at 411mania.com. I'm in the music section, and my column is called The Hammer of Doom. It's, pretty self-explanatory. It's a big hammer. It's doomy. It's metal. I talk about the metal news for the week. I give out free music if I can find it. Talk about, you know, new metal releases, last week's metal releases. And I even give a cut of metal from one country in the world. Last week was Brazil. I think this week's going to be Venezuela.
Have you gotten to Israel yet? Have you played the one metal band I know from Israel?
Orphan Land?
Yes.
Yes, I haven't gotten to Israel, but I do own two Orphan Land now.
They are fantastic, aren't they?
They are amazing. There's a metal show I listen to out of Illinois every Monday. First time I ever listened. I'm like, hey, can you play this on Orphan Land? They're like, I don't know who these guys are. So they played it, and they're like, holy shit. So one of the co-hosts actually downloaded their whole discography.
Outstanding. All right, I want to thank you for being on this podcast. Like I said, hopefully we'll get to do another one. I am, of course, Mark Rattledge. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Rattledge. You can also find me on Facebook, Mark Radulich, LCSW, means licensed clinical social worker. That's what being a mandated reporter is, and frankly, I'm mortified. You can hear me every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. I do the 411 Ground and Pound podcast with some of the MMA writers, the Vile One, Jeff Harris, he who writes the Blueprint, Pat Mullen, and anybody else who deigns to call in at 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern Standard Time to talk MMA. You can also hear me break down movie franchises with newcomer to the 411 Movie Zone, Sean Comer, as we do The Long Road to Ruin, which comes out every couple of weeks. We are currently in the middle of finishing up the Rocky franchise, and then next up to bat will be Paranormal Activity. And finally, one of the other 4 billion podcasts I do, a buddy of mine started a monthly Real Dad's Parent podcast, where it's real dads talking parenting and other stuff that's relevant to us. And we will be in our next podcast discussing, you might wonder how this relates, but it does, trust me, Disney buying Lucasfilms and doing another Star Wars movie. So what does Star Wars mean to us and our children? We're going to be talking about that this month in November. So for Mr. Robert Cooper, I am Mark Radulich. This has been the 411 Music Review, Music Album Review Podcast, and we'll see you again hopefully in a month or so. Here it is, your outro music.
To you folks that I copy, real copy from the hills of Columbia. They're talking to us over you. From a thousand deaths. A cup of blood and blood. A for a cup. Guatemala blood. Ethiopia. Hundreds of them. Nine. You're dying for a cup. Free world to this flavor. You're gonna get some. No!